Hi everyone, this is Tim. Welcome to North and South Pods, and we've got friend of the podcast, Matt Jones, back on, who I've known for 28 years since second year at uni. You once told me the funniest joke ever. But anyway, everyone, Matt is a really nice lad, and I lost contact with Matt after uni. And I used to go back to Stoke-on-Trent, where I went to uni. Matt was still there. I used to go back on nights out with you. And was it Andy, the other lad?
Andy and Dino, yeah.
Anyway, long story short, life goes on. This is before Friends United and Facebook, when our uni days ended in 98 for me, and I think 99, 2000 for you. He commented on Facebook under a comment by Claire Berry, who's been on the podcast before, speaking about ADHD and comedy. Then you and Claire were on together, weren't you, Matt, over a year
ago?
And then Claire's been on again. And you introduced me to Emerson and Amy, who both had issues with well-being and comedy. Because I think there's been studies saying that people on the comedy circuit are more likely to be affected by issues relating to well-being. You know, there may well be some truth in that, which isn't to say everyone on the comedy circuit has got a screw loose. But
I think it opens it up in comedy. And there's a lot of courses that people do, and they're like well-being courses. I've literally just signed up today to be a trustee of a new... There's the Comedy Trust, which this isn't. This is another one, but it's called... something for laughs. It's Henry Cherney, one of the comedians who's running it, and we're doing like a hot water showcase this month. So we've got like a little group of comedians: myself, Henry, there's Maura Jackson from Bolton, there's an ex Bobby fella doing it, and there's a little group of us, and we're all like trustees of this new comedy trust that's going to be aiming at people with social anxieties, need help in society, and just gets them out there, put them in front of a few people. And comedy, when you first start, it's not really about making people laugh. It's about being in a social group. You're in a group of people all learning the same thing, and there'll be like 10, 12 new people meeting each other. And then they're gaining each other's trust and confidence to perform in front of each other. And then it goes to the next level of performing in front of like friends and family as well, who you'd like to think will be supportive. But, you know, when they will be supportive as a collective. But I know if I went to see my mate and he was doing it, I'd take the piss.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think a lot of people... relate to comedy. You get people who are funny and people who tell jokes, and you know, you meet funny people, etc. And you always struck me as a funny person. I still remember that joke you told me about the I better not say, because it's a bit of a rude one, but it was so funny. It was about the sign language one. Do you remember the sign language one? The boyfriend and girlfriend.
Fantastic.
I told people that for years, and then I met up with you again. But I think a lot of people kind of think I could never do that, stand up in front of people, because I've seen at comedy clubs where someone doesn't go down too well and people can be quite ruthless and stuff. But I think what you said there, this idea, if you get people's trust, get them together, build them up, then it's family and friends, and then maybe you widen it out a little bit. But it can be quite ruthless from, you know, just on a couple of nights I've been to where like someone had a bit of a tough night or whatever. But I know like the best comedians say they learn from that and they get better from that. And it depends you're at.
I think you end up going full circle. So when you start, you go on stage and you feel that you've got to have this certain persona, you've got to behave in a certain way, or you've got to deliver your jokes in a certain way. And really, all you end up doing is going through this process of not being very good to not being very good to being a little bit weirder to not being very good again. And eventually, all comedians who are on the pro circuit will say, as soon as you can behave like you on stage, like exactly the same as you now. I mean, you probably got a show voice or a little bit of a front for your own podcast because you want to be perceived in a certain way, and audiences aren't stupid, and they'll see through any change in a behaviour that's not natural. And as soon as you can just become that natural person and laugh at yourself and laugh when things are going bad, and if you are having a stinker, very often, if I get no response to a joke, I'll just go, oh, that didn't go down too well, did it? And that's like daft and funny in itself. I do really bizarre jokes as well.
Yeah. The one where you were on a show with those three people and you said to them, give me something to make comedy about.
Oh,
and
yeah.
one of them said, he said terrorism and something else. And I saw it you was, do that joke.
It was a Mr. Blobby terrorist in Iraq.
Yeah, that was it.
At a kid's party.
yeah, that was it. And you had them absolutely obnoxious. But I think when I've watched you do comedy, I thought you're being mad. You're not putting up a front. Now, you have different... by the way, I don't think I've introduced the podcast properly. Matt is on the comedy circuit and he's kind of pro-ish.
And I'm not.
he's got a daytime job as well, but he does a lot of comedy and he helps a lot of people. And he introduced me to Amy and Emerson, who've been on before. And Amy set up her own CIC about well-being and comedy as well, which she covers in North Wales. She was on a few weeks ago on the podcast. But Matt speaks really well and he's really genuine. And I'm interested in the comedy circuit. I'm not big on comedy because I'm quite picky with me comedy and all that. You know when other people say, oh, what's this comedian? I'll go, yeah. I need to feel it myself first, which is ironic because I don't really watch new comedians. And then you're like restricting yourself from seeing stuff that you like. Do you know what I mean? So it's about having an open mind, isn't it?
It is a recommendation for you. There's an Australian guy called Carl Barron and he's coming to Manchester. And I love him. He's just absolutely brilliant, right up my street. He's one of my favourites. And you meet people on the comedy circuit. Just to explain how it works, you've got club comics that'll do like Fridays and Saturdays at the clubs. And then below that, you've got this privately run comedy circuit. It's like an independent comedy circuit. So the likes of me, and I run them with a lad that Amy was going on about, Jack Miller. So we've got seven nights around the city that we run. And then Amy runs, she's doing a gig in the woods that me and Jack are on, and she does them in Mould, and we're on that. And then there's a couple of girls in Rill, Nia and Sarah, who do Rill Comedy Club.
And I've seen them. They've been on your podcast, haven't you?
And then there's we've got a mate that runs one in the Baltic Market, and they're really good venues. They're all really good, but they're not bespoke comedy clubs. They're privately run, and we all sort of jump round each other's private nights. And then as far as the big comedy clubs are concerned, like Hot Water, I've done something like 17 Sundays there, and then you have to progress through the ranks to do Wednesday, Thursday, Fridays, Saturdays, and then you get, the real money in comedy. And next week, I'm going down for a trial in a place called The Stand in Newcastle. And that's a really big comedy club. And you have to prove yourself to them. So you go up, you do 10 minutes. They'll probably pay some of your expenses to get there. But apart from that, you're traveling all the way to Newcastle just to try and impress. So they might offer you a middle spot, which might pay £150. And then if you get an opening spot, you get more money. And then eventually, if you get a headlining, that's where the big boys make the money.
Do you know what? It's interesting as well with the comedy circuit because it's very, very exposed. But when you're up there, Claire Berry said this to me, and I think Amy's mentioned it, Emerson, yourself. When you're up there, you're never bored, are you? When you're presenting, there's a certain kind of flow and a certain kind of transcendence to presenting. I haven't presented big, but I've introduced like a couple of awards evenings at a school I used to teach in, you know, you're standing in front of a few hundred people cracking a few jokes and that. And there's
Yeah.
something magical about it. And but at the same time, you're very exposed. There's a vulnerability, but there's a magic about it, I think, when it goes right, etc. And I can see the attraction of it. And I can see that, like, when you're on the stage and it's going well, it must be a magic feeling. The other thing as well is like how much luck there must be in it as well, you know, about the ones who really make it and the ones who make it big. Like I watch some of the stand-up things that they do, and you go, you know, they're funny.
Yeah,
They're funny,
and
and I can see why they're good and that, you know.
there's probably an element of luck on the progression side of it, but I think one thing you'll find interesting is there's a massive psychology in audiences, and when you think you've got one person standing there, and then say you've got 100 audience members, so you in effect got 200 predatory eyes looking at you, because we are predators, aren't we? We're gunning for people. And although you come for a comedy night, entertainment comes in mysterious ways. Where when you're a human, you can, as a pack, people can go like, "Well, hold, let's not laugh at this guy yet. He hasn't proven himself to us." And if someone starts to die, all the audience as one go, "Oh God, let's enjoy this death. Let's all take pleasure in watching this person die on stage." Like everyone's almost going, "Let's take pleasure in watching someone really bomb on stage." And that's a human behavior, that isn't it? We get pleasure in both. We like laughing together, but we also like to go, "Oh God, how bad did they do?" You know?
I've seen that happen once at a comedy club, and ironically, he was a warm-up act. He was late. So the main act went on first because
Oh
this guy
my
was
God.
late. So then he come and went on after the main act. I felt sorry for him in the end. I thought it was a bit cruel, really, the way the crowd turned. And it's funny the psychology of crowds. Crowds can be very empowering, but you can also be like, as you say, it's deep psychology, like tribal stuff, isn't it? And
I do a lot of stuff. Like, I like solo sports. I play tennis. I like scuba diving. I like stand up. I like being a solo. I like doing everything just me against whatever it is on the other side of the net, or the audience looking at me, or just being on my own in the water. And you buddied up with someone, but realistically, I can go on holiday on my own and create my own adventures. And it's like some people haven't got the ability to entertain themselves, haven't they? They like to rely on other people to keep them entertained. Whereas I think you get used to being on your own. I live on my own, so you've got to force yourself into entertaining yourself. And even during lockdown, like I was sitting here on my own, I was like, "What can I do?" And I created something called Matioki, and it was me just arguing with Alexa. I'd just go like, if I went to Alexa,
Is she still not talking to you now?
no, she has a cob on. "Alexa, do you want an argument?" No, she's got a cob on.
Yes. The thing is with AI, you know, they're not soft, are they? We've seen all the films, like. But I think it's interesting that, well, I'll have to speak to you privately about the scuba diving because it's something I've been thinking about getting into for a while, but I won't go through that now. But I think
Yeah.
there's definitely a gladiatorial aspect to comedy as well, where there's you up there almost fighting yourself and fighting the crowd. And it can go either way. And people can be quite cruel, can't they? Which is interesting. But that's why it's so good when it works, I think. Because you say that I got a crowd going there. That means something. Do you know what I mean? There's like a success story if it goes well. But
A
it
lot of it's likability as well, because there'll be no comedian that can't. I've seen almost every comedian do well and bad. I've seen some do all bad, but generally speaking, if you've got comedians that are good, they'll all have a bad gig, every single one of them, because they'll just be in the wrong room for them. And the more you progress through comedy, you start to pull in your own type of audience. And it's like with, like I was talking about Carl Barron. If I go and see Carl Barron, I know what I'm getting. I'm getting Carl Barron. So everyone in the audience is there to see him. It's like if you go to see Billy Connolly.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to see Billy Connolly. And he's already won them over because he's proven himself. So people want to listen to Billy Connolly, don't they? So you've won it 90% already.
Yeah, I think if you get to that point, that must be people are coming to see you. And I remember listening to hecklers. Some of the best comedians I've heard a heckle, and they've just gone and just delivered a one-liner with no thought to just like not put the person down, but to respond to it in a way that's directly to do with what they said. And what's the bald guy with the glasses on? He used to do the video shorts on ITV. What was his name?
The ex-lawyer fella, the doctor one.
I'm not sure. You know what I mean? Balded gentleman with glasses. He did like TV burps. I forget his name now.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Everyone was still going, yeah, I know what you mean.
But he was like... He had like a funny, he was like, what are we going to do now?
But someone, he was funny. He is funny. And someone said something to him and he just went. And that was brilliant because I wouldn't say he was struggling, but he was coming out being him and like a few people were pushing back maybe. And he just dealt with it brilliantly.
But he had his collar up all the time, didn't he?
Yeah, he was brilliant. But I think... Sometimes you see people like John Bishop and he ends up getting a TV series on the BBC. And I remember when Russell Brand's got a show on Channel 4. I mean, obviously he's gone down a different path now. We won't go there with that one. But I saw him getting a thing and it's almost like you get offered, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of pounds to make a series. And I saw John Bishop in front of, performing in front of thousands. I don't really hear of him now. I don't know if he's still touring. But...
No, he is. He's doing... he's still gigging. He does Hot Water.
Yeah.
And he does sign language now when he does his comedy as well.
Does he?
His kids, either hard of hearing or deaf. And now he's learned all the sign. So he can do a comedy set in sign language.
That's good. But, I've seen him twice and he was good on both occasions. He's definitely got something. But, for some people, when they make it, I mean, it can be ephemeral. It might only last for a short amount of time or whatever. But as you say, once you've kind of established yourself, you're talking about the Scottish comedian, what's his name? You just mentioned him.
Billy Connolly, yeah.
Billy Connolly. People know what they're going to get and he can go on a tour. And he did all them TV shows as well, to do with his comedy tours. Does he ever watch any of them where, when he's in Australia, he did a series in Australia as well? But
I've got that on old VS, the old videos.
Oh, they were brilliant. I watched all of them. But I mean, I was talking to Amy as well about some of the comedy, a lot of comedy. Is it Andy Kaufman who was that? He did weird comedy in the 70s. Okay. That was quite new at the time. And R.E.M. did a song about him. Great film with him, about him as well, made in the 90s about Andy Kaufman. And it's silly comedy. And I remember when I was a kid watching Reeves and Mortimer and not quite getting it. And then when I was a bit older, I realised how good it was. I remember Dennis Penis. I got the DVD a few years ago. Really? Dennis Penis. He was an early form of Ali G. And then Ali G, that could only last a certain amount of time because then people got wise to him, do you know what I mean? He actually was making quite a few points with satire and stuff. But he was hilarious. But again, his was short-lived because once people all knew him, the celebrities and that. But some of them had quite a lot of breakthrough with politicians, ridiculing them and stuff. And I watched a series a few years ago called The... Revolution Will Be Televised, and it was basically two fellas doing political comedy. And I spoke to Amy about this as well, with Have I Got News For You? It's on its 64th season. And even if you're not into politics that much or comedy that much, you can watch that and laugh your head off. because it's saying something about what's going on at the same time. And I mean, we'll get to this in a minute, the role of comedy. But in fact, we might as well have a chat about it now. I mean, I'm quite picky with me comedy. I like comedy, but I am quite picky with it. And like people say, I was in such and such funny, and I'll think, no, you know, yeah, I'm quite picky with it. Like Alan Carr, I was at a wedding once, and Alan Carr was there. It was before I didn't know who he was at the time. And like I was just talking to him because I didn't know who he wasn't. He said, "Oh yeah, I'm a comedian." And I went, "Oh right." I said, "Sam, my mate was his bank manager for a bit." And then after that, I watched him and thought, "Oh yeah, he's quite funny." But I really appreciated that when I spoke to him, he was really nice. You know what I mean? There was no like side to him. And then obviously, then when I checked him out, I thought, "Oh, he's funny as well." You know what I mean? There's no like arrogance to him or aloofness. I thought he was quite an honest guy, like when I chatted to him.
I think a lot of the arrogance in comedy comes from people that fake it till they make it, and they're not quite there, or they're not famous, but they're trying to tell other people that they're famous, you know. And it's like, if you've made it, very often you don't need to tell anyone, do you? And I always think, I put a quote up today saying, you don't need to tell good-looking people they're good-looking. You don't need to tell funny people they're funny. Because we know, you know, I put the royal we in there, but often comedy is just a defence mechanism. Like I was always funny in school because it got me not bullied, basically. If I was funny, then the big lads, because I was a skinny little runt in school, I was like 9 stone. Anyone could have beat me up. I used to have an argument with like this other lad called Mike Lang, who was probably about 1 pound either side of me. We argued over who was the skinniest in the year. I'd call him a runt, and he'd call me a runt, and I'd be like, "I'm heavier than you, you runt." And if you're funny, it was like we had this fella called, he actually played rugby professionally. His name was Leon Garrett, and he played for like Wigan Warriors or something. And his nickname was Red Arse or Jasper. And he used to dig me in my left arm as hard as he possibly could. But he'd never dig me in my right arm because he knew I was a tennis player. So it was like, it was like a sign of respect to dig me in my left arm. And honestly, my talk of a dead arm, it was just hanging off. And in return, he'd allow me to punch his arm as many times as I could physically do, because my little weak punch didn't affect him whatsoever.
I think it is a defense mechanism, like being funny, isn't it? But also, like, I think the idea of being like, you know, humans evolved in small groups or whatever. I think someone who could make other people laugh had a bit of power and could tell good stories. And I think that was powerful. You know what I mean? There's, like, I don't know if you've seen that laughing yoga in India, you know, where they meet up in the morning and just laugh.
Oh, yeah.
And it's meant to just make you feel, I mean, we know, like, it makes you feel better even if you're faking it, you know. And I think there's a lot of power to making people laugh. And I think also when you can laugh at yourself, and then laugh at others, but also be okay with laughing at yourself. You know what I mean? I think that's so powerful when you can go, yeah, you know.
What the strange thing about self-deprecation in comedy is, it needs to be left on the stage, because I've had audience members say to me, I do a joke about, I feel that God made me a 5 to 5 on a Friday because I've got no chin. And I give the audience like a side on profile and go, like, he'd obviously just run out of chins at 5 to 5. And he's delegated me to like his little sidekick. And then his sidekick's gone, "Oh, like, shit, we've run out of chins here. What else have we got?" And he goes in his little God bucket and he pulls out like something that he can't really identify and just shoves it on me. Turns out to be earlobe. So I've just got like these like really, really big earlobes, and now I can imagine going up to heaven and this assistant God is now on a personal development plan in work, you know, like trying to get through it. And then I go into death quite a lot on my in my comedy, and I do a joke about like the awkwardness of funerals. Like my dad passed away about 10 years ago from motor neuron disease, and I do a joke about the funeral because I've got quite a linear mind. It's if someone says something to me, I very often don't react in the way that you should. I'll just think to myself, oh, well, that doesn't really make sense to me. And I remember one of my mates, have you ever been to a funeral where everyone comes up to you, offers the condolences, and it's like the old COVID queue of people like walking up going, oh, I'm so sorry for your loss, so sorry for your loss.
It's quite awkward. It's awkward, that, isn't it? I think it's awkward for everyone.
And this long line of people. And then one of my mates, his dad died as well a couple of years earlier. And he comes up to me and says, oh, my dad and your dad will be up there now having a whiskey. And my linear mind, my initial response was, and I do this on stage because it's turned into a joke, is my dad doesn't know your dad. So that gets a response because everyone's just going, like, he's obviously just trying to offer you the words of condolence, and you're thinking, why would our dads be up there now? And then I try and imagine going up to heaven and my dad sitting with his dad, and they've both got a whiskey in their hand. They're both made up with the whiskey, but they're just looking across at the other fella going, who's that?
Yeah, you don't know them. But I think the comedy mind, I think there's something in them. So when you hear things, I've got a mate who I used to drive to work with. He's one of the funniest people I've ever heard. And because people say to me, how do you think of the jokes you come up with? Like, I've never done comedy, but like, people say to me, like, how did you think of that then? How did you think of that then? You know, the way my mind is. And I say that about this lad. And I think Amy mentioned this as well. Like, things happen in life that you just think, that's interesting. You know what I mean? Or you turn it into a joke or something in your head. And it's almost like an automatic response. Because what humans do, what we all do, they're all kind of like myths anyway, aren't we? We like buy into like these myths. And in many ways, it's ridiculous what we often do. And I think that those comedians who like can joke about everyday life and how silly it is. Like, what's the guy who looks like Pierce Brosnan, the comedian? He always says he looks like an overweight Pierce Brosnan with the dark hair. Michael McIntyre. He does things about, like, when someone asks you for a pen and you go, no, I haven't, even though you've got no pockets up there. And, like, you know you haven't got a pen. You go, oh, no, sorry, I haven't. And it's almost like just a default to make it clear to the other person.
Yeah.
No, I haven't got a pen. And I'm checking just in case I have because I respect you. You know what I mean? Like,
it's like silly observations I saw some comedian saying about why do we lift our hand to knock on the door? Like your hand's already low down in a knocking position. And you know, because seeing our mum and dad, you go, you have to do that to knock on the door. And you're like, you don't.
But I think that's why comedy is so powerful, isn't it? Because It just makes day-to-day life funny. And, like, funny people, I've worked with funny people, I know funny people, like, you're funny. And, like, when you're with a funny person, I mean, you get people who are, like, a bit miserable and they don't like funny people, do you know what I mean? But I just think it's good being with funny people. I just think it makes life so much better. And people often say to me, like, you joke when it's not appropriate and why do you have to turn everything into a joke? And I go, well, maybe I feel a bit awkward. And therefore, that's why I'm cracking a joke. I don't know, but like,
I think it is awkwardness, and it's to make everyone feel comfortable, isn't it? If you've got loads of awkward people in a room, and everyone's just looking for their escape, if you crack a couple of jokes, there's a lot of one-upmanship in jokes as well. So if I tell you a joke, and there's say five or six of us in a room, and I get all the lads to laugh, the other funny guy in the room's going, hang on, I'm not having that. I've got a joke here. And then it starts to become banter. And then everyone starts like laying into one person. But I think this is one thing girls don't get. You can get six lads in a room. If they're all mates, if they've all known each other, everyone's got like a role, and it is role play. Like you're the one we all pick on, and you take it, and then the next week it'll be like that person, and girls will go, God, you're all so horrible to each other, and you go, yeah, but we all message each other the next day, going, oh, that was so funny. And then we'll send each other like little memes of it or like a photo, and we all laugh together. And no one's feeling like bullied or vulnerable or thinking, oh, all you're thinking is, oh, they got me. Right, I'm going to get them next time. And there are lines that you have to make sure that aren't crossed. But I think lads, especially lads groups, when you know the friendships are genuine and real, and everyone cares about each other. And when the real shit hits the fan, when, you know, when someone loses a parent or people are in desperate need of some help, like mates are there for each other. And that's the sort of beauty of, like, comedy's got its place, but you need good people around you, don't you? It's just having that little trust circle group. And I think the older you get, like when you look at university, you had lots of people around you, didn't you? You know, there'd always be someone there. And I think as you get older, people start to disappear out of your life more and more. And comedy brings that all back. It's like being at university again. There's like this big, big group of people that have all got the same goal. And you've got people with the ADHD, autism. You've got people going through, you know, like gender dysphoria, people identifying as, you know, with all different pronouns, and all the modern day issues of the world. And I think it keeps people like me young and aware of what is going on in the world. Because I know you're hot on it all with your neurodiversity and like everything that you do, and you know, ADHD, and it is just a brilliant world to enter, and you learn so much. You'll travel with comics for like 2 hours in a car, and I think you'll probably appreciate, because a few of the comics do, my honesty and my own naivety. If I don't know something or no idea, like, someone will go, I'm neurodiverse, I'm this, or I've got dyspraxia. I'll say, what's that? How does it affect you? And I think a lot of people are afraid to ask, what's that? What does that mean for you? What's the purpose of it being diagnosed? Why is it important to be diagnosed? And what's the point? Because I always wondered, if someone's got ADHD, why do you need to know you've got ADHD? Because you've got it anyway, haven't you? Mm. You know, so it's unless you can get medicated for it. Alexa, stop.
Okay, Matt's just having another argument with us, Alexa. Welcome to part two, everyone. Me and Matt, we're going to finish in a bit, but we just wanted to finish on the role of comedy, and then basically any other observations on the local circuit, Liverpool, Northwest. He's arguing with us, Alexa.
It was just making noises for no reason.
yeah. She's still angry with you. And also, we'll finish by talking about the podcast that you did with Jack. And, you know, if that's going to be resurrected in the future, because I thought it was really good. So anyway, the role of comedy, apparently JFK, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, he would like laugh with people going, do you know what? I could be the man who ends human civilization. And he was like laughing at it as a coping mechanism in stress. We know that it's a good stress reliever. We know that it's important in terms of satire and actually pointing out things that are bad. Things can change. Just looking at the absurdities of human behaviour. It's a job, etc. But like a world without comedy, I couldn't imagine it, because me friends, some of the laughs I've had with friends, you were talking about groups of lads together, and I'm not saying girls don't experience this as well, but Some of the laughs we've had, me and my mates, where your stomach's in pain, and for years later, you're saying, "Oh, do you remember that time?" And you're almost laughing about it just as much now. There's just something magical about comedy and laughter, isn't there? And it's
Well,
such an important part of our life.
you say about like men and women, and this is like, I don't mind who sees what I say. This is the way I see men and women. And on a night out, women wait for the mate to go to the toilet to slag them off. Men wait for the mate to come back from the toilet to slag them off.
Yeah, that's pretty much right, isn't it? The ruthless women now, like a group of women, I think they can be as ruthless as anyone, can't they? But like, it's interesting looking at the dynamics of groups and our comedy. Like as you said before, I've heard lads say like unbelievable things to other lads, and I'm like, you know what I mean? But they're both laughing about it. Or you can see when it hits home. But like, you know, like they're just feeling each other out, as it were.
And you know what? Lads aren't the best at communication and talking about emotions. Like when people have had bad times, like I'll go for walks with my mates. You know, you're doing it for mental well-being, but you're also doing it to have a laugh and take the mick out of each other. Like I had a mate, he had cancer and it was testicular, and he lost a testicle. And all we were thinking as a group of lads is, right, he's fully recovered. This is fantastic news. When can we start taking the piss out of him that he's only got one ball? You know, you need to break down that barrier. And it's like a celebration of you're okay and we're all made up for you. And he managed to have two kids after getting testicular cancer. And lads are mean, and in a completely loving way, because we're made up, he's had kids. We'd always say, look, you've got more kids than balls, you know. It's lad banter, but there's a lot of love in the room as well to say,
I
look
think
at.
obviously when people know each other, you're in that kind of right to say those kind of things, don't you? But like I've got groups of mates, and sometimes the group dynamic, there's certain groups where you can get away with saying something that you might not with another group. But like I said this early before, maybe it's because I'm a bit neurodiverse or what, but like I often get told of like that I joke when it's not appropriate. I've also got this thing where, you know, like if you get on with someone and you have a good like laugh with them, but then something changes in the relationship, I will still joke and be as open with that person as I was before we fell out or whatever, you know what I mean? And I don't know whether that's a coping mechanism for me or it's ill-judged, but at the end of the day, I just can't be bothered being like too sad about things, you know what I mean? I don't
Oh
know.
no. And you know for a fact, you know when you go for work meals and things like that, and everyone's got their own default group, haven't they, where they can be themselves and they can have a laugh with the mates. And everyone's got that place where they just feel at home, sort of like Cheers, where everybody knows your name. And when you're out with a work group, everyone's on the best behavior. No one's saying anything controversial. Everyone's just telling each other about where they're going on holiday and the boring things of life that nobody cares about, and where they like drinking coffee, where they like doing exercise, or they're going on a run tomorrow. And all anyone's thinking around the table is, I don't care about your life. I don't care about what you said there because it's so boringly dull. Tell me something interesting. Tell me something that I shouldn't know about you. Tell me something that's gone wrong in your life. People don't want to know about your £5,000 holiday or how great first class is or business class or the really nice meal you went out for. You want to hear the bad story where things have gone wrong, and That's what comedy is. It's saying life doesn't treat you fairly, and along the way, have a laugh about it because life's not fair. It's not going to treat you great all the way. People will lie to you. People will pretend their life is perfect, and that will affect people that don't realise that it's just all a it's just all a movie that you're watching someone else's life through the pictures on their Facebook or on their Instagram. And the reality of it is they're giving you a highlight reel. They're not showing them getting up in the middle of the night, stubbing the toe. You know, it's they're not giving you the full picture of what they do to earn the money. They might have all kinds of anxieties and stresses, but that's where I think a lot of people feel alone, isn't it? Because until people talk about it and you say, look, whether it's a physical or mental disability that you've got, or whether it's just a life that has treated you a little bit unfairly, these things happen and it's okay. And people will support you. And I think when people are honest with each other, people take comfort in it to realise that other people are going through things. And there's not one person that is going through life, even if you're a multi-billionaire, you probably worry about dying with all that money in the bank, you know. So I often see people on their own, whether it's on the bus. I remember being in Blackpool and there was a woman, she was about 60 or 70 years old, just sitting on her own. And I just walked past her and said, how you doing? And she went, oh, I'm doing all right. And I was like, oh, it's nice weather. Do you mind if I sit here? And she was from Scotland. She'd come up for a few days on her own and she'd lost her husband. And she goes, oh, it's so nice just to have a chat with someone. And, you know, she probably wouldn't have spoken to anyone for the whole weekend. And it's nice just to say hello to people, you know, help someone in the supermarket, do something nice for someone, you know, say hello to old people. A lot of old people don't get to say hello to anyone all day. You know, and you can do tiny little things like holding a door open for someone and saying, oh, you're all right. And having a little bit of banter with someone if you're in a shop, you know, it's tiny little things that entertains you as well, you know, and you're helping people.
I think the jokes I do, like I'll be in a shop and something will happen and I'll crack a joke in front of people who I don't know and that. But I think you're right. I think you do it for yourself half the time. I think what you just said there, I've never really thought of it like that. It, you know, like, I forget who it was it Kant, one of the philosophers said, in the uncertainty of what reality is, just do nice things. Do you know what I mean? I forget what it was called now, the law or whatever. But just be kind to people. And I think that comedy is part of that. And I think that to create a discourse of kindness and comedy, when appropriate, like, you know what I mean? I think comedy is a real way of breaking the ice with people.
Yeah.
You know yourself, like when two people laugh with each other, there's a commonality and a friendship is established, or at least a respect for each other. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's important too. Man.
Honesty about like what's going on in your own life. Because, you know, as soon as someone starts talking to you and, you know, they're offering you a load of bull, and it's self-promotive and all they're doing is trying to say, like, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, my son is doing this and my daughter's doing this, and you know, my nan's just won an Oscar or something, you know. It's like everything in the life is just amazing. And you just think to yourself, stop it. Why are you telling this story about yourself? Do you need to convince yourself that you've got a happy life? Just be normal and tell people that things haven't gone right, because you'll get a lot more comfort in life. And I think people aren't stupid, are they? You know, when people are being honest and real with you, and that's where your friendships and bonds come into play. As soon as I hear someone showing off and saying, I've got this, I've got that, or I'm thinking of buying this car, or it's like, it's boring. stop
Yeah. Just on that note, I had two fellas. I was picking my lad up from school. Better watch what I'm saying in case any of them chance upon this. But there was two
it.
fellas in front of me talking about cars. I mean, they were getting on a bit like, I think they were both retired or whatever. They were picking up the
Yeah.
grandkids. And I just felt like saying, you boring so-and-so. But I didn't. I didn't. I didn't. They're probably richer and happier than me anyway, but who's to say? Now, you did a podcast called So Yous Do Comedy with Jack. And you did, I think, three episodes. It was a bit of a trial, but
Yeah.
over a year ago now. I loved them. And you had loads of people from the Northwest coming on, like Claire was on and the two girls from Real. And you had that lad
Yeah.
from Fazakerley with the glasses. And I just thought it was really good. And when that stopped, I was like, oh, that's a pity that. I mean, I only watched it because you were in it and Claire Berry was on it. But I thought if people
Yes.
chanced upon that, that was a gateway to all the comedy in the Northwest. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. When we started it, what we wanted to do was try our hand at everything to start with, and just have a go at trying to do a podcast, try and do roasts, trying to do. I do a lot of improv comedy. I go down to a comedy club called Creatures in Manchester, and I love making stuff up on the spot. And it was like, let's try our hand at everything. And we will start a podcast again, and it'll probably be to promote comedy nights, comedy around the Northwest, and get on people that we get on with, and just have a laugh, and keep things low key and real, and just have people chatting about life, bit like this, but I try and be polite on yours and no swearing and things, but we've probably got more of that sort of lad banter in our podcast. It's sort of no frills. We'll take off all the edges. People will swear as much as they want, say what they want, behave as they want, and but generally speaking, people all just having a laugh, getting on, because everyone's a comedian on there. Everyone's trying to outdo each other and get that golden nugget of comedy.
Yeah, no, but I thought it was brilliant because not only did it show how you and Jack interacted and it was done in a professional setting, you got like just people like from the comedy circuit on telling jokes but also funny stories and also just real life stories. Like, I think when you had Claire on and someone else, you were talking about how intimidating it can be for a female comedian in
Yeah.
certain crowds and stuff. Because I was in Edinburgh once for the Fringe, and a woman was on. I saw her on the Wednesday, and she was hilarious. This Irish woman. But anyway, I saw her, like a fella giving out leaflets for her a few days later. And I said, oh, yeah, I went to see her the other night. She was brilliant. She went, oh, did you go on Friday night? I went, no. Like, I went on Wednesday. Well, she went, oh, right. He said, it was like a big gang of lads, like giving her all kinds of abuse. Do you know what I mean? But she was only in there by herself. But she was brilliant. But like, I mean, I suppose it goes with the territory to a degree. But like, it was interesting to hear that from Claire and that other female comedian. You know what it can be like sometimes. But I don't know if you've ever done Edinburgh. Have you ever been up to watch it, or have you ever done anything up
We're
there?
going up this year to perform on the open scene. So it's basically like you jump on free spots like open mics and like. So me and Jack are going up with a few of the lads, and then me and Jack just did a show. We did an hour long show together, and it was called Bonkers. We did it at Lancaster Comedy Festival, and we actually got it sold out, which we were made up with. And the concept of it is I play a patient with mental health problems. All the comedians think I'm a bit mad, so. And I've got all these mad stories. I've just gone through life and things have happened to me, and I'll have like weird phobias, I'll have had weird medical conditions. Everything's just a strange story. Or like I ended up with dengue fever and like traveling to India through working in a call center. And it's live, obviously, in front of the audience. I can see the audience because I think there's an audience with me everywhere I go, and he can't see the audience because he's a psychologist. He's giving me an analysis on being bonkers, and
And then he reads out like a fun diagnosis at the end, and then I sort of speak to this audience that the psychologist can't see.
Yeah, that's good, that, because it's working at a few levels. I think that's interesting, that dynamic. But I mean, I think putting comedy on it, turning comedy into like that theatre side of things as well, I think that there's a lot of magic stuff there that you can discover doing it in a particular format that's different. How would you describe your actual kind of style, as it were? How would you, just to finish, how would you describe your style, and then what kind of styles and comedians do you like? And obviously, I don't, it's hard for you because you must see loads of good ones that people don't really know. You've mentioned Carl Barron. But like, what kind of style and comedians do you
Yeah,
like?
so I like likability. So it's not really about the type of comedy that someone delivers. It's the likability of the character. And if I buy into them as a genuine person and I'm enjoying watching them, I can like any type of comedy. Like I'm whimsical, daft, really daft. Like, and a lot of people do sets and they stick to the same 10-minute set. I did a set last week about films, and like I was talking about Jurassic Park, and I'll say to like the audience, I've got this ability to I can do impressions of anything you want. Name a dinosaur, and I'll do an impression of it. So, like, I made a big deal of it. Said to this person, like, what dinosaur do you want? And they went, oh, a Velociraptor. And I went, I can do every dinosaur apart from Velociraptor. And it's just the stupidity of like playing around with people's expectations of what I'm gonna do, and then I'll suddenly like I'll sing on in comedy as well. I'll do like little daft songs. I'll just burst into song for no reason.
Have you seen Tim Minchin, the Australian guy? He does that. He'll be talking, but then he'll do like a funny song. You know, I think he's classically
Yeah.
trained. And
Oh God, I'm certainly not classically trained. I was trained in the Village Inn pub after 6 pints of Stella on a Wednesday night doing karaoke.
other one guy as well as who used Huey. Was that really daft guy? He was like always sweating on the stage. What was his name?
Oh, Lee Evans.
Lee Evans, like he uses song quite well, you know, like he'll sing songs and incorporate it into his act, which I
Yeah.
think can be quite good as well. I always remember, like, me and my mates the other week, we were out in a pub and we were trying to remember, we hadn't seen it for like years, the prison scene in Stir Crazy. Have you seen it? The prison
No.
scene. You're a bit younger than me. And it's like we were laughing about it and joking about it. And trying to remember all the different things, and then at different times during the night, one of us would go, "Oh, remember that bit?" and then say it, and it was like we were all laughing our heads off, and then the fella behind the bar went, "Oh, I like that scene as well," and started talking to us. So the next day on our WhatsApp group, I sent the video scene round where just do prison scene from Stir Crazy. And apparently they were just like rapping off each other and bouncing off each other, Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder. They were like doing funny stuff, like just getting warmed up. And like apparently the people filming it going, "Oh, that's funny, say that, like do it." And you just watch it. Just watch it. It's absolutely brilliant, the two of them. For me, like if anyone said like name a funny scene from a film, I'd just throw that on. And
When you
like,
can
but
reference it with your mates, have you ever seen Burniston?
yeah. I can't
So
believe you said that, because you can't watch that in England, can you? It's only on in Scotland.
is it, yeah?
I went up to Scotland years ago and I watched it, and some of it's like off its head. Like, I don't think it'd extend very well, travel very well outside Scotland. But it wasn't.
It's so funny because they do this scene. And once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. And me and my mates send pictures of shoes and gloves to each other off the back of watching Burniston. And what they do is they'll be walking along the road. And you know, whenever you walk along the road, you'll sometimes see a random shoe just on the top of a bus stop or just on the floor. And they sing this song going, Whose shoes are they? Whose shoe is that? Whose shoes are they? Whose shoe is that? Whose shoes are they? And then they'll suddenly come across a glove and they'll go, whose glove is that? Whose glove is that? Whose glove is that? And me and my mate, we just send each other pictures of random gloves and shoes and socks and anything that you find on the street. And you're going, like, how the hell is there just so many one shoes? How do people lose shoes so much on nights out?
It's funny that, because Berniston is right up my alley. That is genius, the way they write things. And have you seen the ones on Berniston where the moth, he swallows the moth or the fly goes up his nose when they're having dinner? I've told people that for years and said, you've got to watch it on YouTube because they don't show it in England. And
I've seen the
what?
Have you seen him in the lift where he's trying to go up to the 11th floor? And it's one of these talking lifts.
Oh, yeah.
And the lift goes, which floor would you like to go to? And he goes, 11, 11, 11. And he's got this like deep Scottish accent. And the lift can't understand the Scottish accent.
They joke about like swearing as well. Like, there was one where they got like some lad and he said, right, we're going to turn you into like this hot singer, like, you know, this lad from like the streets. He said, you've got to stop swearing now. Like, so they're saying to him, like, you're okay. Answer this question, but don't swear before you say it. Now, I don't swear on my podcast, so I'll edit this out, but he drops a few F-bombs. But, like, he'll be standing there and he'll say, what's your name? His name's Steve. And he goes, fucking Steve! You know, he just can't do it. Like, it's an impulse. But I've noticed that about Scotland. Like, I've been in Scotland before, and, like, women will drop C-bombs. And, like,
oh, God.
The culture's different. The culture's different. But that is genius, that Berniston. And it's not even a real place. They made it up, you know, like Burnstown. They made
it
up.
It's got like a real cult to it.
Yeah. But I can't believe you've seen that, because I don't think there's many people in England who've seen it. But that is absolutely brilliant. And it's incidental stuff. But it's genius. Like, I don't know if you've seen Limmy. Have you seen Limmy, the Scottish comedian?
No, don't think so.
He's more famous than Berniston. But again, he's looking at it from a very Scottish perspective. Do you know what I mean? And you know, like you had the other guy, who was the name? Rabsy Nesbitt and that, like, and that translated well. They brought it down here. That is funny, like Rabsy Nesbitt. But I think it's great comedy, the way it can be so subjective but local, but there can be a universal genius about it. But that Berniston, absolutely phenomenal. Like, I couldn't recommend it more highly. I can't believe you mentioned that. Berniston, man, that's mad. Right, I think that's a good place to stop anyway, Matt, because it's like you're up early in the morning, so I'm up early as well.
Let me just tell you a really, really daft thing. A little, when famous people have said little phrases, and I read this thing about this kid getting confused with, have you ever heard the phrase, knowledge is power?
Yeah.
So it was the funniest story ever. This kid went into school and handed in his homework, and he went, oh, I've done all my research. And the teacher says, knowledge is power, Francis Bacon. And he went, knowledge is power, Francis Bacon. And the kid, like, goes home and he just doesn't understand it. He's been analysing it all day. And he's heard in his head, knowledge is power, and as a separate quote, France is bacon. So as if bacon is France. And he goes home to his mum and he's like, knowledge is power, and his mum says, France is bacon. And he just can't understand how these two little things are linked. And he goes, oh, I'm gonna go up to my dad. And like, he goes up to his dad and he goes, France is bacon. Like, just completely, like, how's that work? And he goes, knowledge is power, son. It's just a great little way to think in life. You can have all the knowledge in the world, but if you don't understand it, you're not getting anything out of it.
Do you ever use that in your stand-up?
No, it was just something I came across, and I just thought, oh, it'll be good little analogy for your podcast, because I know you're all about building up people's knowledge of, you know, all the mental health side of things. It's great what you do as well, mate. I think what you do, bringing awareness, is really good work.
Yeah, cheers. I've had about 7,000 listens so far across the two platforms. But yeah. I do with getting it out there a bit more and that, you know what I mean? But I think it's hard independent, doing stuff independent, low level. And sometimes the time you have to put into things can be quite big as well. Like, I've got a young lad and you're working and all that. It is good. And I just felt like I needed that outlet of creativity and doing something positive.
I don't know. And it's about enjoying it. And I think what you've done is you've gone into it for the right reasons. You're not going into it to be, you know, the number one podcast in the country. And a lot of people, they start podcasting and go, why aren't I famous? I've done 25 podcasts. I should be on there. I should be getting interviewed by Lorraine, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, Joe Rogan asked me to come on, but, you know, I've got me principles, you know what I mean, with his conspiracy theories and all that. But that's another story. Nah, but it is hard, like, sometimes. But I know, like, people do it for a bit. But I said to myself, I'm going to do 100 podcasts, and I'm now on 115 released. So I've got five more in the can. So probably this will be 120, something like that.
And that's it. You, sticking at stuff and keeping going is so important in life, because in comedy, people go, oh, I might give up. Why? Mm. Unless you really hate it. Mm. If you're enjoying something, stick at it. I've played tennis for like 43 years. I'm never going to get any better. I'm only going to get worse, but I enjoy doing it. So it's just, don't worry about getting better or thinking life's about pleasure, and you'll always have elites and someone at the top of the tree, but we can all do what we do. You know, I do comedy, and God knows where I'll end up or what it'll lead to, but I enjoy it.
I think that's a good way to finish. By the way, I don't play tennis, but the cross court backhand, is that what the shot's called?
Yeah.
Oh, when you pull that off, it's a wonderful feeling, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
I haven't played for years, but I remember playing once, and we had a little tournament in work about 10 years ago, and I bought a little racket and everything, and thought, oh, I've never really played tennis as an adult. So I started having a little game, and you start realising that you need to put a bit of top spin on it and all that. Have you read David Foster Wallace, by the way? He was like an author who committed suicide, but he was a tennis obsessive, and he's wrote a book about tennis.
Yeah.
And he's a genius. He committed suicide, unfortunately, in 2008, but he wrote a book about tennis, which I think, if you like tennis, I think you should
give that a go, yeah.
David Foster Wallace, yeah. All good. Right, listen, you need to be up in the morning, as do I, so I'll leave it there. I don't usually do evening podcasts, but one thing I'd say is I've really enjoyed doing this, and I've been laughing and speaking to a good friend who I've known for a long time. So it lifts the mood. I was talking to my mate last night outside. My mate pulled up in his car. He was driving past. And I just chatted to him for like 45 minutes. And I came in, I was buzzing. You know, you always think, oh, I need to get in. I've got this to do and that to do and all that.
Yeah.
And I think the good thing about comedy is you don't do comedy because of things that have happened in the past or things that are happening in the future. I think a laugh is a mindful gift in the present. It's just a transcendental, like, joyous experience. You know what I mean?
No, it is.
You never feel bad after. If you laugh at something, it doesn't matter if you've been feeling bad before, and you're always going to feel better afterwards.
Well, so, what's the first thing a baby does? It cries and laughs. The two most basic human emotions there are. Yeah.
And they're actually quite closely linked in many ways as well, aren't they? I always remember my dad trying to make us laugh when we were kids. You know, if we were crying and he'd get us laughing, and the cry would immediately just turn into a laugh. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I heard Russell Brand say this once. Like he said, have you ever seen like two had an argument, two people are having an argument, and then something stupid happens, and then the next thing, 2 years are just like on the floor laughing.
Yeah,
and it's such a powerful thing. Such a powerful thing. But keep doing what you're doing, mate. Thanks for coming on. People out there, subscribe, get involved, come on, get people to come on. And if you can, get the price of a cup of coffee once a month using the podcast notes to help me along. Matt, thank you so much. Have a nice evening and keep up the good work, mate. I'll stop the recording and then we'll have a little chat, mate. See you later, everyone.